We're on Yud Beis Amud Aleph, six lines up from where the lines get wide at the second last word on the line where it says Tanan, Hayu, and then Bodkin. Yesterday we learned how in the time of the Gemara, people kept time by looking in the sky. They would, for example, look at the sun's position and determine based on that what time it was, and how this has actual halachic ramifications, beginning with the issue of when in practice the Chacham required us to refrain from chametz on the 14th of Nisan. For all of the Tanaim of our Mishnah agree that the Rabbanim were concerned that a person might misread the time, and that, of course, could have dire consequences, and that if we stuck to just the biblical time, only beginning to refrain from chametz at midday, a person might incorrectly believe that it's not midday yet, and eat chametz when in reality it's ready after the sixth hour, and he would transgress the biblical prohibition. Therefore, all of the opinions of our Mishnah agree that the Rabbanan decreed that in practice we begin refraining from chametz earlier than at the end of the sixth hour. Specifically, Rabbi Meir in the Mishnah says that the Rabbanan advanced the prohibition back for one halachic hour, but Rabbi Yehuda is concerned for an even larger mistake, and so he says that the Rabbanan advanced the prohibition back for 2 hours. So that according to Yehuda, chametz already is prohibited at the end of the fourth hour of the day. And yesterday we learned how the issue of a person not necessarily having an accurate reading of the time has a bearing on the issue of two witnesses who testify to a crime, let's say to a murder, and where the two testimonies of each witness, of course we need a minimum of two, do not agree as to the hour of the alleged crime. So it presents us with two choices. We must either conclude that one of the witnesses is lying, in which case, of course, we reject the testimony, and we'd obviously not execute the accused on the basis of the testimony, or we might be able to attribute the discrepancy to human error. Maybe one of these witnesses, or possibly both, misread the time, and that explains the discrepancy. And we learned the Mishnah in Sanhedrin in which, again, Rabbi Meir apparently gives a smaller margin of error, if anything, than his dispute in Rabbi Yehuda. For Rabbi Meir in the Mishnah says that if one of the witnesses said the murder happened at hour 2, another witness said hour 3, that testimony would still stand. However, if one witness testified that the murder happened at hour 3 and the other witness testified it happened at hour 5, we would throw out the testimony. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda says that no, even in the latter case, one witness has said it's hour 3, the other witness hour 5, the testimony would still stand. And the Gemara presented two opinions regarding the understanding of these opinions of Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda. First, we had the opinion of Abaye, who at least in version 1, argued that according to Rabbi Meir, we allow for no margin of error whatsoever. We don't assume that the witnesses would make any kind of mistake in terms of correctly keeping the time. And the only reason why Rabbi Meir is willing to tolerate the case where one witness says the murder happened hour 2, the other witness hour 3, is because we make the assumption that the crime actually occurred at the end of hour 2. And it's just that these two witnesses use different words to refer to that same time. When the first witness said hour 2, he meant the end of hour 2, and the other witness said hour 3, he meant the beginning of hour 3, but they were actually referring to the same time. So in other words, there really isn't any kind of contradiction between the testimonies, therefore it's fine in that case. Whereas, if I explained in Rabbi Huda's opinion, witnesses might inaccurately keep the time by up to a half hour. And thus, in the case where one witness says the crime happened at hour 3 and the other witness hour 5, we assume that the crime actually happened halfway into hour 4. We further assume that the first witness, when he said it happened hour 3, meant at the end of hour 3, and so he was off by a half hour. The other witness who testified the crime happened at hour 5 meant the beginning of hour 5, so he too was off by only half hour. That's within the margin of error, and therefore the testimony would be accepted even in this case. But Rava strongly objected to Abaye's understanding on grounds that it doesn't make sense to make an assumption in order to uphold the testimony. After all, the Torah says, V'hitzilu ha'eda, that when it comes to capital cases, the court is actually supposed to be very skeptical of the evidence, and if there's a way to interpret the evidence that would exonerate the accused, the court has a duty to do so and thereby not execute this person. And so Rav offered a different approach. He said that, in fact, according to Rabbi Meir, witnesses might inaccurately keep the time by up to just under 2 hours. Thus, even without any making any assumptions in favor of the testimony, if the opposite, we assume the worst for the testimony. We assume the widest distance between the testimony is that when this witness says the crime happened at hour 2, he means the beginning of hour 2. When the other witness says it happened at hour 3, he means the end of hour 3. The testimony is nevertheless upheld because at most the discrepancy is under 2 hours, and that's still within Rabbi Meir's margin of error. And Rava explained further, according to Rabbi Yehuda, witnesses might make an honest mistake about keeping the time correctly and be off by as much as just under 3 hours. Hence, even in the case where one witness says it happened at hour 3, the other witness hour 5, the testimony would still be valid. Now you will note that although in a very general sense, the opinions of Rabbi Meir Rabbi Yehuda of the Mishnah and Sanhedrin are in line with their opinions of our Mishnah here in Pesachim, in the sense that Rabbi Yehuda argues for a much larger margin of error. However, in terms of the particular degree, it doesn't seem to match. Whether you're working with Abaye or Rava's understanding of the Mishnah Sanhedrin, that will be noted today. But first, the Gemara raises a difficulty with the dispute of Rabbi Yehuda from the beginning of that very Mishnah there in Sanhedrin. And that is, Tanah, we learn in the beginning of the Mishnah there as follows. The court would examine witnesses coming in to testify by asking them the following 7 standard questions, which aim to establish the time and place that these witnesses are testifying the crime to have occurred. So, 6 of the 7 all have to do with time. They ask me, Shavua, which Shemitah cycle are you testifying the crime occurred in? We know every 7 years begins a new Shemitah cycle. So that's obviously a very broad way of describing the time of the incident, and they drill down from there. Then with the Beis Hashana, in which year did the crime occur? Beis Chodesh, in which month of the year? And then Bekama B'Chodesh, which day of the month? Then Beis Yom, what day of the week? And finally, Beis Shah, in what hour of the day did this crime occur? And then question 7 is, Be'ez Makom, where did this crime occur? The Mishnah there goes on to explain that after asking the witnesses the Chakiros questions, they would then ask the questions that are called Bedikos. It means additional questions. If, for example, the witnesses are testifying about a murder, the court would ask them, did you recognize the victim or the murderer? What weapon did he use? What clothing was he wearing? The Mishnah says the more such questions the court can ask, the better. Per the emendation of the Maseres HaShas, where it says Utnan, we learn further in the Mishnah there, the Mishnah explains Ma Bein Chakiros LeBedikos. So what's the halachic difference then between the standard 7 Chakiros questions versus these additional Bedikos questions? The Mishnah explains Chakiros, in the case of the standard 7 questions, where we're establishing the time and place of the alleged crime, the halachi is Amar Echad Men Eini Yodea Edusam B'Teila. If either of the witnesses responds to any one of those questions, I don't know, then the testimony is null and void. And the reason for this will be presented below, whereas Bedikos, in the case of those additional questions, Afilu Shneihem Omrim Einanu Yodim, even if both witnesses respond to one of those questions, we don't know, Edusan Kayemes, the testimony would still be valid. Because the purpose of the Bedikos questions, aside from gathering more information, is to cross-examine the witnesses and catch them potentially in a contradiction. If the witnesses contradict each other under Bedikos questions, then we would throw out the testimony. But if they say, I don't know, and that is not a disqualifying event. Now, Vavinanba, in the Gemara there in Sanhedrin, we ask, Maishna Chakiros and Maishna Bedikos, why are the 7 standard questions and Bedikos questions different in this way? Or the way you could ask the question is, why is it that if one of the witnesses, in response to one of the 7 standard questions, says, I don't know, why should that completely invalidate the testimony? Ve'amrinan, and we explain there in the Gemara in Sanhedrin, And the reason is as follows. Chakiros. When it comes to the seven standard questions, where we're trying to pinpoint the time and place that they're testifying about, either of the witnesses, in response to any of those questions, as I don't know, down to the hour of the alleged crime, the testimony becomes null and void. Because as soon as the testimony is vague in terms of the time or place of the alleged crime, the testimony is no longer subject to a refutation through hazama. It is other witnesses coming in and refuting the testimony by testifying that, no, they couldn't have seen any such crime at that time and place, for these witnesses were with us at that specific time somewhere else. And the Torah implies that it is an essential requirement of testimony that it be subject to hazama. They have to clearly say on the record exactly when the crime occurred. And what this accomplishes is that people thinking about offering false testimony will think twice about that, knowing that their testimony, by definition, will be subject to hazama, that if other people could come in and say, no, these guys were with us at that time. And in that event, the Torah states that we then actually impose whatever punishment the conspiring false witnesses were trying to inflict on their victim with their false testimony is now inflicted upon them. So think twice about giving false testimony. And so this helps ensure the credibility of establishing the facts in court through witnesses. That is why the seven standard questions that have to do with time and place of the alleged crime are essential questions. If the witnesses fail to answer any one of those questions, if they can't describe their testimony right down to the hour of the crime, then the testimony is not valid. As opposed to bedikos, where the witnesses fail to answer any of those additional questions, that is not a disqualifying event for Eidishat Yochel Azimahi. Even though answering those questions, it remains testimony that's subject to being refuted through Hazama. The Gemara now points out, let's assume Rava's understanding of the dispute of Rimer and Reb Yehuda. Rava said that Rimer allows for a margin of error in terms of not accurately keeping the time of up to just under 2 hours. Reb Yehuda says there's a margin of error of up to just under 3 hours. Gemara points out, if it's true that a person, a witness, could make a mistake in terms of the time by so much, well, then why should we be satisfied even where the witnesses do submit an answer in terms of the hour of the crime, even if they tell us the hour of the crime in answer to that question of the chakiras? Still, the testimony still doesn't fulfill that essential requirement of being subject to hazama. For in practice, if other witnesses come in and say, hey, no, they couldn't have seen that crime, for at that hour they were with us, that wouldn't constitute a refutation of the first testimony. Because we grant witnesses a margin of error up to 3 hours, according to Rav or Yehuda. And so based on that, the first witnesses could say that, yeah, we were with you at that hour. So I guess we were off by a few hours, and they would be able to wiggle out of it. And thus, again, the problem is, even if they give an answer to the sixth Chakira question, they tell us the hour that the crime occurred, it's still testimony that's not necessarily subject to being refuted through Hazama. The Gemara answers that, no, in fact, it's good enough for certainly Hazama could occur if these first witnesses told us the hour of the crime, the avina lehu kule tusayu. As long as the second pair of witnesses testifies that the first pair was with them for a duration of time such that even if we grant the maximum margin of error for the first pair, it still emerges that, according to the second pair, they were actually somebody else that entire time. And the Gemara provides us with these specifics, according to first Rimer and then Rabbi Yehuda, again assuming Rava's understanding of their opinions. The Gemara first discusses the case where one witness testified that the crime occurred at hour 2 and the other witness testified that the crime occurred at hour 3. So Lirabi Meir, according to Rabbi Meir, when Rava's understanding grants a margin of error of up to 2 hours, Well, therefore, Yavirin Lahu Mitchilas Shah Rishona Ad Sof Chamesh. Factoring in Rimer's margin of error, we would allow for the possibility that the crime could have occurred anywhere from the beginning of the first hour of the day all the way through the fifth hour of the day. We allow for the possibility that the actual time was anywhere through the fifth hour because we have this witness who's saying that the crime happened at hour three, which possibly means at the end of hour three. And then we say, well, maybe he made a mistake about the time. He was 2 hours early. So it could be the actual time was the end of the fifth. And now because of the first witness who testifies that the crime happened at hour two, meaning maybe means the beginning of hour two, we say, you know, factoring in the margin of error, could be that real time was the beginning of the first hour of the day. The Gemara explains about dinhu dinesiv luhu meyakaritfe. Even though at first blush we should be even more flexible and allow an additional hour going earlier, because Remer's margin of error is 2 hours. And so if the first witness is testifying that the crime happened at the beginning of hour two, well, then you go back 2 hours, that puts you actually at 1 hour before the day starts. But in fact, the margin of error does not extend that early. Surely people do not make a mistake in terms of understanding what time it is between day and night. You would never claim the crime occurred sometime during the day if, in fact, it was still dark out. And so what the Gemara is saying is that according to Rav Ezra ben Meir, in order for Hazama to apply, the second pair of witnesses would have to testify that the first pair was with them in a different place from the first hour of the day through the fifth hour of the day. If they gave such testimony, there would be Hazama in such a case. So that's good enough, so to speak, because Hazama would happen in this case. The testimony fulfills the requirement of being subject to the possibility of Hazama. And the Gemara now explains Ulu Rebbe Yehuda. Now, according to Rebbe Yehuda, who, according to Rava, grants a margin of error of 3 hours, and on that basis, Rebbe Yehuda upholds the testimony even where witness one said the crime happened at hour three, and witness two testified the crime happened at hour five. According to Rebbe Yehuda, hears how Hazama would be possible. Yavina lehu mitchilas esha rishona v'yad sof shishas. The testimony of the first pair of witnesses is given a latitude that the actual time could have been anywhere from the beginning of the first hour of the day through the sixth hour of the day. The Gemara explains why this is all they get, where it first addresses Ubadinu, Dinesiv Luhu Meikara Tfe. By rights, like if we're approaching this only mathematically, the witnesses seemingly should, according to Rav Ezra ben Yehuda, get more latitude. First of all, going earlier in time, if you have one of the witnesses testifying the crime happened at hour three, so meaning let's assume the beginning of hour three, and Rav Ezra ben Yehuda holds that we have a margin of error of 3 hours, well then that should put us a full hour before the day started, not just at the beginning of the first hour of the day. Turning to Amud Beis, the Gemara explains it just as we did in Rav Meir, that Ella ben Yamama Lelelia Lato Inchi. Okay, now we don't give the testimony latitude to extend before the day starts because nobody would make a mistake between day and night. Further, the Gemara addresses Ubadinhu Dinesiv Lekamei Tfe. It would seem that according to Rabbi Yehuda, the testimony should be given latitude to escape Hazama for an additional 2 hours going forward in time. Because you have the second witness who testified that the crime occurred at the fifth hour, so let's assume he means at the end of the fifth hour. Well, then according to Rabbi Yehuda, we should not only grant him a margin of error of 1 full hour ahead, but another 2 full hours. The witnesses should get a latitude of through the eighth hour of the day in terms of escaping refutation through Hazama. Ella shebechamesh chama b'mizrach v'sheva chama b'marav. But in fact, they're not given that much latitude going forward in time because of the fact that typically it's plain and obvious to everybody there's a clear demarcation between midday and afternoon. For once we're in the afternoon, the sun is in the west portion of the sky. So no, they don't get latitude that much in that direction because nobody would make such a mistake. The Gemara at this point begins to compare the opinions of Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda that we learned about in our Mishnah here in Pesachim with their opinions that we've been studying in Sanhedrin. Tonight we learned in our Mishnah, Rabbi Meir Omer. Rabbi Meir says, Halach is ochlin kol chamesh v'sarfim b'tchilas sheish. On the 14th of Nisan, we may continue to eating chametz through the 5th hour. But already at the beginning of the 6th hour, we cannot eat the chametz, and it's totally prohibited for benefit. We have to burn it already at that point. It is, Rabbi Meir says, that the Rabbanan advanced the prohibition of chametz by 1 hour, apparently out of the concern that people might make a mistake about the time by an hour, which could result in a biblical violation. Therefore, let's just start the prohibition 1 hour before. But Rabbi Yehuda Omer Ochlin Kol Arba, we can continue eating chametz through the 4th hour of the day, Vitolin Kol Chamesh, but already at the end of the 4th hour, for the entire 5th hour, we suspend the chametz, meaning we can't eat chametz, though we don't have to burn it yet. Besar from Mitchilas Sheish, says the burning you could do, like Rabbi Meir said, 1 hour before the biblical time at the beginning of the 6th hour. Starting with Abai's understanding of the dispute of Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda in Sanhedrin, the Gemara notes the apparent mismatch between what they're saying in Sanhedrin and what they're saying in Psachim. The Gemara points out, Le'abaye Eliba, the Rabbi Meir, the Amar Ein Adam Toa Velo Klum. According to Abaye's understanding of Rabbi Meir's opinion here in Sanhedrin, that the person is given no margin of error whatsoever in terms of the time. We assume that people always have an accurate understanding of the time. According to that, Necha Kula Shes, why should there be any decree whatsoever when it comes to the chametz prohibition? We should be allowed to go by the biblical time. That technically, we should be allowed to eat chametz all the way till the end of the 6th hour. So why does Rabbi Meir and Psachim say that no, we have to begin refraining from chametz a full hour before the actual time? And the Gemara notes further, Ulahach lishna nami diomer adam to'amashehu nechal atzof shes. And the question is essentially the same, even according to the second version of Abai that we learned yesterday, which says, okay, Rabbi Meir allows for a slight margin of error. The point basically is the same, which is, why would Rabbi Meir in Psachim require that we refrain from chametz a full hour before the actual time? And further, the Gemara points out, V'abaye aliba de Rabbi Yehuda de Amar Adam Toa Chatzi Shah. According to Abai's understanding of Rabbi Yehuda's opinion in Sanhedrin, that a person might make a mistake about the time by half an hour, it also doesn't fit. For why would Rabbi Yehuda in Psachim decree that we already have to start refraining from chametz 2 hours before the actual time? Why 2 hours? Nechal ad palga deshis. Seemingly, we should be allowed to eat up until the middle of the 6th hour, half hour before the actual time should be good enough. That accounts for the margin of error of half hour. And again, it's also a problem according to the second version of Abai, Lahachlish Anami, the Umr Adam Toa Shah Mashahu. According to the second version of Abaye's understanding of Rabbi Yehuda, that he allows for a margin of error of 1 hour and a little bit, it still doesn't match with Rabbi Yehuda's opinion here in Psachim. For fine, if people make a mistake by an hour, nechalat sof chamesh, we should be allowed to eat chametz up until the end of the 5th. And that would protect that even if a person made a mistake by a whole hour, they wouldn't transgress the biblical prohibition. Our answer is El Amar Abaye. Rather, Abaye explains, Eidos Mesura Lizrizim. Testimony is given to people who are very responsible, conscientious people, who are much less likely to make any mistake about the correct time. As people come to testify in Bezdin, knowing full well that they will be scrutinized with the Drisha V'Chakira, all those questions, they're going to be bombarded with questions. So they only come into Bezdin to testify if they are confident that they have a clear recollection of the event, and they were careful to note the time, etc. And thus, in Rabbi Meir's opinion, we allow for no margin of error. Rabbi Yehuda allows for a half hour, maybe an hour, but not more than that. Whereas, chametz l'kol masur. The prohibition of chametz, of course, applies to every member of the nation. So since you're talking about the general populace, there's a greater concern that people might make a very big mistake about the correct time. According to Rabbi Yehuda, a mistake of up to 2 hours. The Gemara now compares Psachim with Sanhedrin according to Rava's understanding of the dispute in Sanhedrin. The Gemara says, V'Rava Liba de Rabbi Meir, the Amar Adam Toash Dei Shos Chaser Mashu. According to Rava's understanding of Rabbi Meir's opinion in Sanhedrin, that a person might make a mistake about the time for for up to 2 hours. The question is, why does Rabbi Meir Pesachim only decree that we refrain from chametz for just 1 hour before the actual time of the prohibition? Seemingly, the rabbinic prohibition should extend back in time for another hour. If people could make a mistake by a full 2 hours, okay, that means we should start the prohibition, not eat chametz from the beginning of the fifth. Gemara answers that no, a person would never make such a mistake, since chamesh chama b'mizrach v'sheva chama b'marav. No one would confuse midday with the beginning of the fifth, because at the beginning of the fifth, it's still, you know, late morning, the sun's in the east, whereas by chatzos, by midday, by the actual prohibition, sun's already in the west. Therefore, no one would make that particular mistake. Even if, you know, in general, it would be possible to make a mistake in time by 2 hours, nobody would confuse the beginning of the fifth hour with the end of the sixth hour. The Gemara asks, Yachi, but if so, according to that logic, Bishis Nami Nechol, Rimeir should allow us to eat chametz even at the beginning of the sixth. We should be allowed to essentially wait all the way until the actual time of the prohibition, because there's that clear demarcation that once the sixth hour is over, the sun enters the western portion of the sky. The Gemara answers, No, Amrav Ada Barava, Shis Yoma Bekarna Sekai. Throughout the sixth hour, the sun is right in the middle position, and so, you know, that's already close. It's not so obvious, you know, when it transitions from the middle of the sixth hour to the end of the sixth hour. That is actually something people could get confused about. So a decree to stop eating chametz for the sixth hour is warranted. The Gemara now addresses V'rava liba de Rabbi Yehuda di'amar adam toa gimel shos chaser mashehu. According to Rava's understanding of Rabbi Yehuda's opinion in Sanhedrin, that a person might make a mistake about the time for up to 3 hours. Question is, well, then seemingly mitchilas dalid lo in nechal. Why does Rabbi Yehuda in Pesachim state that we start refraining from chametz from the beginning of the fifth? Seemingly, we should decree to already refrain from chametz from the beginning of the fourth hour. The Gemara answers that, as we said above, mehei chama b'mizrach v'sheva chama b'marav. As late as the fifth hour of the day, the sun is still in the eastern part of the sky, as opposed to by the beginning of the seventh, the sun is already in the west part of the sky. So people wouldn't even confuse those 2 hours, v'kol shekein dalet. Well, the more so would people not confuse the fourth hour with the beginning of the seventh hour. Therefore, there's no basis to decree to start refraining from chametz at the beginning of the fourth hour. The Gemara points out, yihachi, but if so, behei nami nechol. Why doesn't Rabbi Yehuda agree with the Rebbe Meir that we should be permitted to eat chametz even through the fifth hour? Since at this point it's still very clear, people are not going to confuse hour 5 with hour 7. Where it says, Tirgama Abaye Liba de Rava. So Abaye stepped in here on behalf of Rava with the answer that he presented above when we were analyzing things in his understanding. He says, we can use my answer I said above to explain things according to my colleague Rava, which is that Eidos Mesura Lizrizim Chametz La Kol Masur. In practice, people coming in to testify are uniquely conscientious type of people who are much less likely to make a mistake about the time, as we explained above, whereas the prohibition of Chametz applies to the general populace, and thus we have to be concerned for a greater margin of error when it comes to the prohibition of Chametz. Hence, when it comes to the chametz issue, Rabbi Yehuda says, we must already refrain from chametz at the beginning of the fifth, for even though witnesses wouldn't confuse the fifth hour with the seventh hour, people from the general populace might, and so a decree is already warranted at that point. But Rav himself now offers a different answer to this last question. But Rav Omar, Rav explains, Lav hainu taima de Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda's opinion regarding when the chametz prohibition begins on the rabbinic level isn't related to the issue of making a mistake about the time. Ela Rabbi Yehuda le'taimei, where that has to do with Rabbi Yehuda's own opinion in terms of how specifically a person disposes of the chametz. The Amar Ein Bir Chametz Ela Sreifa. As we learn in the Mishnah Chaf Aleph, Rabbi Yehuda says that one disposes of chametz specifically through burning it. On account of this, V'yavu le'rabbanan sha'achas lilkot ba'etzim. Rabbi Yehuda therefore imposes this extra hour. We extend the chametz prohibition for another hour back to the beginning of the fifth. So it should be on people's mind that, oh, we have to start getting ready to burn the chametz at the beginning of the sixth. So they'll begin to gather wood and things for that purpose. But the Gemara rejects this answer. Eisvi Ravina l'Rava. Ravina challenged this answer to Rava from the following Braisa. Braisa states, Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Ei Masai. When specifically do I require that the chametz be disposed of through burning? Shelo b'shas biyuro. Only where the person is disposing of the chametz before the informal time that one is actually obligated to do so, meaning throughout hour six. Specifically at that time, the person must destroy the chametz through burning. Aval b'shas biyuro. But when there's a full mitzvah to destroy the chametz, namely at the end of the sixth, hashpasasa b'kol davar. The disposal of the chametz may be accomplished through any means. So we see then that you don't actually have to specifically burn the chametz. If you're doing it at Shas and Biuro, if you're doing it at the end of the sixth, you can use any method to destroy the chametz. Therefore, we can't explain that the reason Rabbi Yehuda extends the prohibition another hour earlier in time is because of some absolute obligation to burn the chametz. No, there is no such absolute obligation. So Rava suggests a different approach. Elam Rava, rather Rava explains. And the reason Rabbi Yehuda says that we refrain from chametz already at the beginning of the fifth is gzeira mishum yom ha'meunan, is out of concern that maybe that day will be a cloudy day. If it's a cloudy day, of course, you can't use the sun as a guide to tell what time it is exactly, and therefore it would be possible in such a year that people might make a very big mistake, and you're thinking it's still morning, you still eat the chametz, therefore we start the prohibition substantially earlier, a full 2 hours earlier than the actual time of the prohibition. The Gemara wonders, Yahachi, if so, if that's the concern, the possibility of a cloudy day, afilu ba'ar b'shos namin lo nechol, then seemingly we should have to refrain from chametz even during the fourth hour. For it would seem that if it's a cloudy day, we can't use the sun as a guide at all to tell what time it is, that a person conceivably could confuse midday with even the fourth hour. The Gemara answers, Amar Papa, Arba Zman Suda Lakolhi. That if such a mistake would never occur. Because most people have their morning Suda at that time of the fourth hour. So surely people could sense if it's really the fourth hour, so that a gross kind of error would not occur, even on a cloudy day. The Gemara digresses to elaborate on the proper time a person should have his first meal of the day. Tan Rabbanan, the Rabbanatan Nebraisa. Shah Rishona Machaludim. Eating at the very first hour of the day is the practice of the cannibalistic people, the Ludim. They're a gluttonous people, really into food. Therefore, they eat at the first hour of the day. In other words, the Brisa is frowning upon that. Shnia Machalistin. Eating at the second hour of the day is the practice of thieves. They're also really into taivas, into satisfying their craving for food. So they eat as soon as they get up, but they have to get up a little later because they're busy of stealing things during the night, so they get up a little later. Not till the second hour of the day, and as soon as they get up, they eat. Shlishas machli yarshin. Eating during the third hour of the day is the practice of those who have inherited great wealth and so don't need to go to work. It's because they're not rushing to do things for their job. At the beginning of the day, they're more like you're sitting around at home, so they already at that time, the third hour of the day, will have their meal. And Revius Machal Palin. Eating at the fourth hour of the day is the practice of workers. They don't have the luxury of the Yorshin to eat by the third hour. For they, you know, start their day busy taking care of what their boss needs, so they only get a chance to eat by the fourth hour. And Chamishis Machal Tamid Chachamim. Eating at the fifth hour of the day is the practice of the Talmidei Chachamim, who are busy learning until that time. And finally, Shishas Machal Kol Adam. Eating at the sixth hour of the day is when everybody else eats. The Gemara questions this. V'amar Papa Revius Zman Suda Lakolhi. Papa said that people in general eat at the fourth hour of the day. That's what we said above too. So where it modifies El Epach. You reverse it as follows. Revius Machal Kol Adam. Fourth hour of the day is when people typically eat. Most people have their first meal at that time. Chamishas machal poalim. Eating at the fifth hour is the practice of the workers who are busy carrying out their boss's orders. until that time. Shishas machal talmidei chachamim. Eating in the sixth hour is the practice of the talmidei chachamim who are learning all the way up until that point. The Braisa adds, mikan ve'elach kezarek even l'chemas. Eating after the sixth hour is like throwing a stone into a bag, where it might seem like the contents, say the wine in the bag, increase, but really nothing of value occurred. So too, a person might feel like he's being nourished, but no, he's not really receiving the nourishment properly if he waits so long to eat. The word qualifies this. The above only applies if the person literally ate nothing until the sixth hour. But otherwise, if he had a little something in the morning and had only his first or proper meal after the sixth hour, we wouldn't object to that. That would be okay, but he would receive your proper nourishment from the meal in that case. When I return to the discussion of comparing the dispute of Meir and Yehuda of Sanhedrin to their dispute here in Psachim, Amar Vashi says, K'machlokas ve'edas kach machlokas b'chametz. Their dispute regarding the testimony, where there's a discrepancy in terms of the time of the testimony between what the two witnesses say, how much margin of error we allow for, parallels their dispute regarding the issue of chametz, the issue of how much people conceivably make a mistake about the time, which will determine, you know, how early we should begin the chametz prohibition. The Gemara objects to Rav Ashi's statement, pshita, but this is obvious, hainu hachdar minan. That's what we've been saying all along. The whole objective of this Gemara has been to reconcile the specific numbers that Rav Yehuda and Rav Meir discuss in each case. Even though the specific numbers don't match up, we ultimately explain how, in fact, everything lines up, everything makes sense based on the specific context of each case. So what exactly is the point of this statement of Rav Ashi? The Gemara answers, HaKemash v'lan shinui d'shanin and shinuyahu. Rav Ashi is simply affirming the solutions we presented above to reconcile the two Mishnayos are valid. These are accepted answers. They aren't just forced answers. They are accepted velo tema tanoi. And so the point is, you should not conclude and these aren't actually valid answers, and that instead we'll have to say that there's a dispute of Tanaim as to what Rav Meir and Rav Yehuda held in terms of what kind of margin of error we allow for. Rav Ashi is saying, no, the answers we gave are good ones, and therefore these two Mishnayos are perfectly consistent with each other. We're now discussing a case regarding where we have a discrepancy between the two testimonies in terms of the time that the alleged crime occurred. Amar Rav Shimi Bar Ashi, lo shanu ella bishos. We would only allow for a discrepancy in terms of the time of the alleged crime if, okay, one person said this hour, the other person said that hour. Both witnesses agree that it happened at some hour of the day. But if one witness testified that the crime occurred before sunrise, the other witness said after sunrise, well, then the testimony is null and void. For that would be an irreconcilable contradiction. You can't say there was an honest mistake there. No one would be mistaken between day and night. The Gemara asks, Pshita, this is obvious, of course it's true. Why does Rav Shimon Bar Ashi even have to say this? So the Gemara modifies the case he teaches, where it says, Ella, Echad Omer Kodem HaNetzachama Ve'echad Omer B'tocha Netzachama Idusan B'teila. He's coming to say that if one witness testified that the crime occurred before sunrise, and the other witness testified that it occurred at sunrise, even in that case, the testimony would be invalid. The Gemara asks, Sonami Pshita. But this ruling also seems self-evident. For is the appearance of the sun coming above the horizon not a clear demarcation? Seemingly it's a very clear demarcation. And so it should be obvious that these two testimonies are not reconcilable and that, you know, it can't be a case where somebody made an honest mistake. The Gemara answers, it's not so obvious. For Ma'udisim, you might have said that actually Tarvayu Chad de Milsa Ka'amri. Perhaps we could assume that both witnesses are actually saying the same thing. That is, v'had de kamar, continuing to Yud Gimel, b'tocha netzachama, the witness who testified that the crime occurred at sunrise, maybe what happened here was, b'giluya havekai, he saw a kind of radiance, some kind of a light, and mistakenly concluded that the sun already began to rise, when in reality, Zaharuri ba'almahu dechaza. It was just a glow, a radiance, like a reflection, which led him to believe that the sun already started rising above the horizon. And if we could assume such a thing, then that would be like an honest kind of a mistake, and we would have no reason to reject the testimony. Kamash Malan. So Rav Shimon Rashi comes to teach us that nobody would actually make a mistake like this and mistakenly believe that the sun had risen when the sun had not actually risen yet. And therefore, the halacha is the testimony in this case is rejected.
You've been listening to RealClearDaf.com. Visit us online for resources or to dedicate a shiur. To speak with Rabbi Wise, call 855-ASK-RCD-1. That's 855-275-7231.